Have you heard about clean tech? No, it's not about disinfecting your keyboard. We're talking electric vehicles, green steel, and solar batteries. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. This is From Idea to Intellectual Property, a podcast about today's big ideas and the IP considerations behind them. Dr. Gareth Dixon is principal at Spruson & Ferguson. He made the jump from organic chemist to clean tech a few years ago, and he's not looking back. Now, by the year 2030, it's estimated the clean tech market will have surpassed the value of the oil market and could be worth just shy of $1 trillion. So, Gareth, give me the clean tech elevator pitch. Why is it growing so quickly?
There's a couple of reasons it's growing so quickly, Lisa. Number one, there's no universally accepted definition of clean tech. Because of that, it's interpreted very, very broadly. The way I interpret clean tech is that it's anything that's cleaner than what's out there already. The best example of that is, I think, cement manufacture. It's one of the most environmentally destructive commercial processes that's out there. And let's face it, the global demand for cement isn't going to go down anytime soon. So inventors are sort of scrambling for new and improved ways of making cement that does less environmental damage. So if somebody was to come up with a cement manufacturing process that was slightly less destructive than what's out there already, to me, that's still clean tech. It's that broad definition in conjunction with, you know, people's ever-increasing environmental consciousness, the feel-good factor, because it is a good industry to be involved in. It's actually nice as a patent attorney to be involved in a feel-good industry. So all those three things, I think, in conjunction mean that clean tech is actually booming. It is taking off. It's becoming a headline technology, whereas as previously it may not have been.
And what are some common examples of clean tech that we might have exposure to?
A couple of really good ones that are right up my alley as a chemist: hydrogen and batteries, anything that, you know, can be used in electric vehicles.
Let's use electric vehicles as a case study. So what aspects of intellectual property are relevant?
The full spectrum, I think, Lisa. Anything from inventing to protection to licensing to tech transfer. Compulsory licensing is a big thing. I don't know if you heard of that. That's where the government can step in and commandeer a patented technology if society's demand for that technology isn't being met. A good example of that is somebody gets a patent for, you know, a whiz-bang clean tech invention, but they don't really have the commercial means to exploit it or to put it to its full use. A third party can petition the government or the patent office for what's called a compulsory license. The government steps in and says, you will license this technology to this person, but in exchange, you will actually get an appropriate royalty. So it's just the government's way of ensuring that these, you know, really, really beneficial inventions actually are able to be exploited.
And what's a specific example of that in the clean tech space?
The best example of that is something that actually never happened. It goes back to what was called the COP15 climate change meeting in Copenhagen, I think it was 2009.
Next, world leaders are gathering in Abidjan at the COP15 to discuss the impact of desertification and drought throughout the world. The issue has reached...
China basically wanted blanket compulsory licensing so that they could exploit clean tech for electric vehicles, and never actually happened because the rules of that particular summit were that there had to be unanimity, and there were a couple of dissenters. I think India dissented, you know, of course, probably some of the large US corporations.
The ones who owned patents.
Exactly.
What are the trends in relation to patents and electric vehicles?
The trends are that the number of patents being applied for and granted is just increasing exponentially. That's true whether you're Elon Musk type Tesla or whether you're a Toyota or even if you're just a university lab doing research. So the overall trend is that it's taking off exponentially. All the projections are that it's going to continue that way. And with that, it stands to poke and prod the patent system in ways that potentially were never actually envisaged. So it's going to be an interesting few years, I think.
In what way is it poking and prodding?
I think it's all to do with freedom to operate. The more patents that are out there, then the more potential pitfalls any third party wanting to innovate in that space has to negotiate before they can actually commence. Of course, if a new startup comes and wants to be active in the clean tech space and they've got a budget of X, and it's going to take them 90% of their budget just to actually work out what patents are out there, what they can and can't do, then there's actually only 10% of their original budget left for actually innovating in that space. And I don't think that that's actually in the industry or actually in society's best interests. That's probably a pretty good example of the way that the patent system actually stands to stymie innovation in the clean tech space. Of course, the flip side is that by offering a 20-year monopoly for a clean tech invention or indeed any other invention, that's incentive to innovate. So they're different sides to the same coin, I think. Like anything, it's a balancing act. That there are issues out there and people are aware of them and looking at ways to circumvent them.
I was really surprised and interested, Gareth, when I read that Tesla actually has not many patents.
And the thing that I want to ask you about is patents, as you call them.
Yeah.
Now, a few months ago, you decided to open them up, make them open source.
Right.
For some key areas of Tesla car development. What is the thinking behind
them? All of our patents.
Oh, all of them. Okay. Yes. What is the thinking behind them? And is that something that perhaps the oil and gas industry should consider?
This is because Elon Musk, apparently his view is that patents do stifle progress.
Should they get together and just junk the patents?
I think patents are... I don't like patents, personally. You know, when I was first starting out developing technology, I got lots of patents and I thought this was a good thing. And then I sort of discovered that a patent was really like buying a lottery ticket to a lawsuit. I was like, I'd rather not buy those tickets. You look at sort of the battle between Apple and Samsung, and who's really winning there? You know, the lawyers are winning, certainly, but neither of those two companies. In the case of Tesla, I thought, would Tesla ever sue some other car company if they were using our patents to try to make them stop making electric cars? We would never do such a thing. So why pretend that we would?
What is your response to that? What's your experience?
Response to that, if you're Elon Musk, you can probably do what you want. You can adopt whichever attitude you like, I think. Wonderful if you can still innovate in that area and put those innovations in the public domain, fantastic. That's the way that society's going to get out of this environmental bind that we're in a little bit. On the other hand, not everybody is in that position that Elon Musk is in. You know, in innovating in this space, you have to be able to protect what you're doing. Otherwise, competitors can come in, undercut you. I mean, this is patent 101. You have to recoup all your R&D costs, so you have to charge a premium for what you're doing. And if a competitor can come in and undercut you in the market, you're going to go out of business very, very quickly.
Now, Gareth, I've got a really exciting idea. It's for a wireless electric motor vehicle charging station for corporate fleets. And I've decided to call it Battery Buzz for busy business bodies. I've just come to see you and I kind of want to know at the start, how much money do you think I need to put aside for this, Gareth? Because I'm going to seek patents in relation to my amazing invention.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know how long it's going to take because I feel like I've got in early, to be honest.
Okay, so it sounds like you might have a bit of a patentable idea there, Lisa, in conjunction with a trademark. So in terms of your budget, how long is a piece of string? Look, the patenting process and one of the criticisms that's been levelled at it across the globe is that it does sometimes take a long, long time. I don't know if you ever watched the program Suits.
Yes.
But there was an episode where Harvey one morning drafted a patent application, filed it at the US Patent Office and had it granted by lunchtime.
Okay, have you ever filed a patent before?
I just got back from this meeting with Harvey and he wants me to file this patent, but I have no idea what that paperwork looks like, so
of any help in this arena would be rude.
Did Harvey call you and tell you to do that?
If only. I mean, these things do take years and years and years. There's these horror stories of patents that were once filed in the European Patent Office that, as we mentioned, a patent lasts 20 years. These patent applications had expired before such time as that they'd been fully examined. That's the exception, obviously. But, I mean, the process does typically take a long time.
How long are we talking here? Is it like a year or is it more?
Some countries are faster than others. Australia, you can, if you really, really push it from filing to grant, you can do it in less than a year if you really want to. I would say that in some of the larger offices, the US Patent Office, European Patent Office, Japanese Patent Office, 4 to 5 years is probably about average.
And is there a tension there given how quickly this whole space is developing that seems like it's out of kilter with how the pace of these technological advances?
Yep, 100%. But clean tech's probably not your best example in that respect. I mean, the short-lived ICT and tech based technologies that are sort of being built iteratively upon every day. Those are the technologies that really suffer from the slow turnaround. Clean tech does suffer in that regard because you want certainty as third parties. You want technologies being published and disseminated so third parties can potentially experiment around them or design around them, those types of things. So you don't want bottlenecks in industries that you want to be progressing very, very quickly, and clean tech's a good example in that regard.
And for my invention, what are some of the other considerations I might have when I'm even thinking about whether or not to patent it?
Other considerations are, well, obviously there's budget, there's your potential market downstream, who you're going to sell it to, how are you going to not just get your money back that you spent on R&D, but actually make a profit, that there's the potential patent scope. You might eventually be able to get a patent, but if that patent itself isn't broad enough to stop competitors working in the same space, then again, you'll be the one to go out of business very quickly because you need to recoup that R&D cost by charging a premium. And if they can do essentially the same thing, even though it may not be infringing your patent, they'll be the ones that win in the marketplace. That's a big consideration. We always say patenting is just one piece of a very, very complex jigsaw, and I think it's only getting more and more complex as time goes on.
And how much coin am I going to put aside for this patent application?
Just add a zero, I think.
Keep on going.
Keep on going. There's no hard and fast rules, because if you have a patent application that goes through one examination report and you can get it granted or allowed fairly quickly, obviously that's going to be a whole lot cheaper than one that you tied up extended examination processes such as the RCE in the US and appeals, all that sort of thing. And you may go through 10 or more examination reports over 4 or 5 years to get the patent allowed. So by and large, it comes down to how easily you can get the patent across the line. And as we just alluded to previously, very often that's a function of how broad you want to go. Very, very easy in theory to get a very narrow patent granted very quickly. But as we talked about before, if it's not of any commercial use to you, then arguably it's money down the drain.
Now, I'm thinking about my product, Battery Buzz, for busy business bodies, and I'm wondering whether there's any certification system so that I could be certified as clean tech. I'm thinking about my marketing already.
I'm sure there is, but I don't know how credible or how universally accepted it would be. I mean, I'm sure there are any number of bodies out there that are willing to sort of, certify it as a clean technology, but quite what it means, I'm not sure. I could be wrong here. I'm not sure if Australia has any universally accepted standard for clean technology. Again, based on the fact that there's no universally accepted definition, I'd be surprised if there was.
And so the cheeky part of me wants to know, is it really a marketing and branding ploy, the category of clean tech?
Again, it's one piece of the puzzle. If you go out there and you market yourself as clean tech, obviously that feel-good factor that goes with it, and you've got to think that in a commercial sense, people are going to get on board with that for just general feel-good reasons. As one piece of the marketing strategy, yeah, seems like it'd be very, very worthwhile.
And then, talking through the landscape, what are some of the other major or critical obstacles facing Aussie companies like mine trying to get into the clean tech space?
I think one of the biggest obstacles that Australian companies have is the distance that we are from the rest of the world. For instance, you're a California clean tech startup. Most of your target market is on your doorstep sort of thing. Whereas we've got that extra distance that we've got to travel in. And with that comes regulatory barriers, cultural barriers, financial barriers, exchange rates, all those things that make it just that little bit more difficult for an Aussie clean tech startup to actually go global.
Gareth, you've been in this area for yonks. What excites you the most about this space?
I think I mentioned the two technologies that I can really get my head around, hydrogen and batteries, and the benefit that they can bring. We've been talking about decreasing emissions from cars. There are other cool new technologies. For instance, the use of seaweed in cattle reduce the methane emissions from cows by up to 90%. That's an amazing clean technology. Anything that can just reduce the harm that some of these processes and are doing to the environment.
Gareth, I just had this image of these cows wrapped in seaweed just then. Is that how it works?
Maybe it is. Apparently the cows don't actually have to eat much of it. I mean, I'm not a big fan myself. sushi bars and the like, but
Our partners will be encouraging us to eat seaweed so we have less methane in their light, ozone layers.
Exactly, but it is methane in cows is an enormous polluter. Again, people tend to concentrate on the damage that humans are doing through industrial processes like cement and the like, but I mean, nature has a way of polluting as well. So the clean tech industry as such is broad enough so that we are sort of innovating in all those areas to try to mitigate a lot of the damage that's being done.
Now, Gareth, I was very intrigued about your background as an organic chemist because I did science and law, and I was in the area of intellectual property, and my major was organic chemistry, but I was terrible. Mm-hmm. But tell me about why you decided to become get into the area of intellectual property and being a specialist in patents from being an organic chemist.
To me, being a research chemist was a little bit up and down. When experiments were working, that's all the motivation you need to get up early and get into the lab and stay late. When experiments weren't working, it was the opposite. You just pull the covers over your head in the morning and spend as little time as possible in the lab. And very often that there was no real rhyme nor reason that I could think of why things were or weren't working. So to me, it was a little bit up and down, and I was just looking for something a little bit more flatline. It doesn't come much more flatline than patent law, so.
You went to the flattest flatline.
Yeah,
it's just joking.
But it was also a good way of applying the science that I'd learnt in perhaps what's not a classical vocation for scientists. So.
And then, what would your superpower be in relation to being a patent attorney with this organic chemistry background, do you think, Gareth?
My superpower would be the ability to look into a crystal ball. the same one that everyone would love to have.
I love that. And Gareth, what's coming down the line then for clean tech? Let's put you on the line.
You know, an iterative advancement of the technologies that are out there now. We've got solar, we've got wind, we've got wave and ocean power. Just finding ways to address the energy crisis that we're currently in by means of sort of using these natural resources that we have to produce clean energy. All the tools, the fundamental building blocks are in place. It's really just a matter of dreaming up the science now that's going to connect the dots there.
And where's the trend going? Is it hydrogen? Is that the future?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's hydrogen as such, because hydrogen obviously is an energy source is obviously competing with batteries, etc. So they're all sort of competitive clean technologies. It's going to be interesting over the next few years to see which one predominates. Perhaps EV is actually the flavour of the month at the moment. It seems like that there's an awful lot of innovation, a lot of publicity press toward EVs rather than hydrogen-powered vehicles, for instance. That might be one way it's going to go at the moment.
It's like the VHS call of the, which one will have that huge take-up and the other one falls away.
Yeah, still can't believe Beta lost that one.
That's right. And don't listen to me, because I was the one who said in 1993, the internet, it'll never catch on.
Never catch on. No chance.
When I first saw it at university, I announced to everyone, and everyone still reminds me. Oh, Leong, you're the one who said the internet will never catch on. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Thanks, Lisa.
That was Dr. Gareth Dixon, principal at Spruson & Ferguson. Thanks to our producer, Cara Jensen-McKinnon. This podcast is brought to you by IPH, Asia Pacific's leading intellectual property services group, helping you turn your big ideas into big business. I'm your host, Lisa Leong. Bye for now.